It was May 17th, 2010, and Laszlo Hanyets went down in history by becoming the first person to buy goods with Bitcoin. His now infamous purchase of two Papa John's pizzas for 10,000 BTC has led to countless jokes about how much those Bitcoin would be worth today. But buying pizza with Bitcoin demonstrated that the new cryptocurrency truly was something that anyone can use. That hasn't changed at all. In fact, crypto's easier to buy, sell, and spend today than ever before. And in Samantha Radokia's new book, Bitcoin Pizza, she helps make crypto easy for all to understand. Sam Rad is with us today to discuss her rad book and thoughts on crypto. We're bad, she's rad, and this is episode number 339 of the Rad Bad Crypto Podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition.
Who's bad?
Welcome to the Bad Crypto Podcast. We're here for you. In fact, we've been waiting for you. It's about time you showed up.
Gosh, where have you been all my life?
I mean, we're waiting, and you didn't check your Google Calendar. You had an appointment with us, and now you're finally listening to the show. But it's okay.
It's about time. It's only took you 339 episodes to get here.
This is the show for people that want to learn about Bitcoin, or those that just like talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, or, you know, maybe you just like bad dad jokes, in which case you've come to the right place.
Yeah, this is your first time ever here? Seriously? Well, subscribe. Go ahead and click the little subscribe button. That way you can get us in your ear holes more regularly.
That's what all the cool kids are doing.
It's true.
So if you want to be cool and a kid.
And if you want to be regular.
Are you saying that we're like Metamucil for their ears?
Listening to bad crypto helps you have smooth bowel movements.
It's true. Science. It's amazing to me that our sponsors come back for more, because I've got to transition into that right now.
That's the worst place for a sponsor. It's like right after our opening banter.
I've got this. I've got the segue. You know what else is smooth, Travis? Oh, yeah. Our sponsor, eToro. And that segue was super smooth. You know, if you're looking for one place where you could trade, plan, discuss your crypto strategies all in one place, if you've lived in Europe, then you've had this all along. You might not have even known it, but 11 million of you do. It's called eToro. It's the world's number one social trading platform, and they have a cool new feature called copy trading. Basically, you can go and see what other traders are doing if they make their profiles public. And if you like the win percentage that you see of another trader, you can basically say, okay, I want to portion X percentage of my portfolio to do equal amounts of what they're doing. And you just say copy. Boom. Now, whenever they're trading, you're trading what they're trading. And if they're making money, you're making money. And if you want to stop trading with somebody, you just say, I'm done trading with them. Stop copying them. It's all in one easy to use app. And if you're a new eToro user in the United States of these Americas, in the states we're allowed by law, then you can get $25 in free Bitcoin from Mr. Travis Wright and myself for opening up a new account and opening a position of $50 or more in any of the cryptos. Go to badco.in/eToro. Do it. Well, I'd say do it now, but maybe do it after you're done listening to the episode, or hit pause, go do it, and then come back and hit play. eToro, badco.in/eToro. Mr. Travis Wright, do you have a smooth transition to our guest interview today?
I don't know. That was an amazing transition you had over there, Mr. Joel Kahn. But I do want to say this, that this episode, this interview was pretty awesome. I think that Sam Rad is, she's awesome. She got
she's earned her name. Yeah.
We like her.
Good stuff. You guys are going to like her too. Let's do it. We do love it when we see women in the crypto world that are leading the way. And for those that are not easily offended, we like to refer to them as crypto chicks. And we got permission from our guest today because she's a proud crypto chick. She's an author of a book called Bitcoin Pizza, The No Bull Guide to Blockchain. Her name is Samantha Radakia, but she goes by Sam Rad because nobody really knows how to pronounce her last name. She's an entrepreneur, a cultural technologist, an author, a keynote speaker, and she is pretty rad. Sam, welcome to Bad Crypto.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for not being offended by words.
Oh, yeah, I'm not easily offended.
Well, I mean, your book, it does say The No Bullshit Guide to Blockchain.
Yeah, it's almost as bad as my name, honestly. Like, well, I'll be giving public keynotes or whatever, and people introduce me, and just the same way they pause in my name, and they'll be like, rad. They'll do the no BS guide to blockchain. And it's, you know, been almost as polarizing as the crypto industry in general.
I don't like to go too deep into bios because we can discover a lot while we're talking, but your bio is so impressive that I just want to share a little bit of this. You have led corporate trainings at Fortune 100 companies, governments, investment firms, and the United Nations. You are a contributor to Forbes. You were named in the 30 under 30 list in 2017 by Forbes. You hold several patents. You're a co-founder of Chronicled, which is a blockchain company that focuses on supply chain. I mean, this bio just goes on and on here. Not only that, but you're a licensed pilot and you've jumped from planes over 700 times as a competitive skydiver. I mean, you are rad.
Thank you. That's, I mean, a much more flattering bio than I usually give for myself. I guess I'm just kind of hyper as a person.
Well, no, good for you. So let's, you know, why don't you hit on some of the high points of your life before blockchain? Maybe put some meat on the bones here of what I just shared.
Sure. I mean, I can't really remember a life before crypto and blockchain because it's like opening Pandora's box and you can't go back in. You know, you start unpacking the concept of what is money, who creates money, what is a nation state, and, you know, all of these big kind of crazy questions. And those are questions I've been asking since I was, you know, very young. So I'd say even before we had a name for all this crazy stuff we're doing, I was still very interested in a lot of the same ideas. But I don't know, in terms of who I am, what I was doing, I just like kind of a gamer, kind of hacking around, learning how to build things, became super fascinated with games like World of Warcraft and a virtual world called Second Life. I actually convinced my university as an undergrad to let me study it as an anthropologist and like live in Second Life. So basically I just got to play, well, that wasn't a video game, but like do stuff on the computer instead of schoolwork. And that's actually when I became really fascinated with this idea of like digital assets and digital exchange. It was like, I can make a t-shirt that's digital in this world and get paid the in-game currency, which is the linen dollar in this world, and then exchange it for money. And that money was Bitcoin or US dollars. And it was just weird. They were like sketchy, not sketchy, but like, I don't know, you'd find people on like eBay, like trying to exchange these assets. So, I mean, that's kind of when I started to get into it, which was a very long time ago, kind of on the earlier side of things in this industry, and then didn't really do much with it. Like, was fascinated, started a few companies in a few different industries unrelated, and then ultimately came back full circle in about 2014 and thought, I've got to start working on this.
Very cool. And so you've written the book Bitcoin Pizza, the No Guide to Blockchain. Very
nice. It doesn't taste like pizza.
Joel's trying to eat it.
Does it taste like Bitcoin?
It doesn't taste like Bitcoin. It tastes like victory.
It's like victory. Now, so is this sort of an I've not had a chance to read the book. I don't have a copy of this. Joel does.
You're so well prepared, Mr. Travis, right?
So well prepared. Now, does this go into depth then about the Laszlo story and the 20,000 Bitcoin or 10,000 Bitcoin or whatever it was to buy the pizzas, and then you expanded it from there? Is that how the book came about?
The book came about, well, again, I come from the perspective of both, you know, kind of an engineer developer, but mainly an anthropologist. Like, I love human behavior and people and culture. And I found that there wasn't really a lot out there about crypto culture. So people are, what is this crazy industry you're in? People are driving Lamborghinis. They're talking about to the moon. Like, what are all of these terms? And so I started making just like a fun glossary, and it expanded from there. So the story was a huge part of it. And I thought the title was fun. Like, who doesn't love pizza or Bitcoin? But really, it was mainly...
I love pizza.
Yeah,
I love exactly. Bitcoin.
Cool.
I think I'm going to have pizza for lunch now. I'm hungry.
It's a universal concept. I mean, wherever you are in the world, you'll find people that'll buy this book because they're like, well, pizza, I like that. And then they learn about Bitcoin or vice versa. But it was really just to, you know, I was doing all this work with my company and we built products, but people still didn't understand like what this industry stood for, why we were all working on similar challenges. And so I found myself doing a lot of explaining and education. And at a certain point, I was like, there needs to be something for newcomers to give them basically a survey of the industry and not just crypto, not just Bitcoin, even though, you know, some on like the maximalist side, you would say, okay, why is this book not 100% about Bitcoin? But I had to also acknowledge shitcoins. I had to acknowledge enterprise blockchain, all these things, because that's the state of what people are doing. I don't necessarily maybe agree with it all, but, you know, I thought that newcomers needed to feel empowered with the, you know, the happenings, the myths, the stories of the industry, so they'd feel more confident coming into it.
This is a really different approach than a lot of the crypto books that, you know, we've read and authors that we've interviewed, because as an anthropologist, right, so much of this is focused on human behavior. I love, you know, this chapter 10 says party like it's 1994. And that's, you know, I was there too. I built my first website in 1995 and Travis was, you know, on his computer doing his thing. And we remember that. And one of the things that I said when I really understood crypto for the first time in early 2017 is that this feels like that. Right.
Yeah.
I've been here before. This is deja vu.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of people will draw that analogy. So it's also sort of a play on it because it's like that. But at the same time, now we have the benefits of the internet and the communication that it's enabled to develop yet another one. And so the goal, again, of the book, like we all need to be more educated, you know, so that we can learn from mistakes of the past and truly build something new and longstanding and not just, you know, replicate existing systems or entrench existing systems. And I became honestly super frustrated in the enterprise world because there were many approaches to using this technology just to, well, one, do things that really it was unnecessary for, but two, mainly use it to like, you know, and more deeply entrench the way that things are working or not working now. And I couldn't really do that anymore.
Very interesting. Now I'm actually looking here on Twitter. There's Bitcoin_pizza. And like every day it tells us how much the value of those two pizzas are worth. The Bitcoin pizza today, those 10,000 Bitcoins worth $87,479,450. Wow. That is some expensive pizza.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like Laszlo has gotten a lot of, I mean, well, he hasn't really been in the press, but there was the one interview with Anderson Cooper, I think maybe last year, but he was on the short end of the stick for that one. I don't personally know the person on the other end of that transaction, but I've heard about that person and they're on the winning side.
They're on the winning side. Well, I would assume that Laszlo had a lot of additional Bitcoin.
Yeah,
would you? Willing to give away 10,000 of them. You'd think he would have at least that's double that.
Fair.
I think that's a fair thing to say. So, you know, so you talked a lot about gaming and, you know, Joel's a big fan of crypto and gaming. You know, where do you see gaming and crypto headed here in the new world? And actually, before we just jumped on, Joel was mentioning that Minecraft Earth has just popped up and now there's going to be this AR layer of Minecraftiness all over. And he just made a video the other day about air coins, which has, you know, he's walking around sort of like Pokemon Go and collecting cryptos in his neighborhood. So What are some of the cool things that you, what are some of the cool things that you've seen on gaming, and where do you foresee it heading?
I mean, so the AR VR immersive experiences, I think, is definitely very interesting, especially now that you mentioned collecting coins. So I actually studied game design for my master's degree and got like super into it. All we did was play games. It was the best school I've ever had. But yeah, we studied actually, like, again, human behavior of like why people are collecting these things. Again, coins, say in Mario, and it was really not for any material gain. It was more for glory, but that's just an aside. So in terms of gaming, why I have a whole chapter on it, one, it was my foray into this industry. So that's mainly what I know, but it's from the people that I have met and are familiar with. That's also how they came into crypto or became aware of it. And I think a lot of folks in the gaming industry understood a lot of the fundamental concepts of digital scarcity or digital assets long before Bitcoin, you know, it came about or was proposed. So I think it's naturally the first area of adoption. So I think, sure, the NFTs and these things are interesting, definitely not the end game. You know, digital collectibles and trading games are very rudimentary. I think if we start expanding our thought into what the future actually is, the one that other industries are building, so not just crypto, but the world that we're living in, where people are becoming more and more distributed, like we're talking through, you know, the internet right now through kind of shitty interface, like it's a 2D interface. So if we imagine that we'll be living immersed with haptic suits, maybe like, you know, VR, fully immersed in this like constructed world or worlds that we can construct collaboratively, then yeah, it becomes a very important backbone for, you know, managing all of those processes and ensuring that there is fairness. So yeah, I mean, we could already be living in that world. I don't know. We could go down the crazy simulation hypothesis.
We could be there. Yeah. Actually, I'm one of the guys that didn't come to crypto because of gaming.
Where did you come from?
Well, it was just, you know, I had saw an article on Slashdot back in 2010. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sort of dipped my toe into crypto a couple times. And then, you know, and then I never found any buddies that really ever I could jive with it about, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh man, I found this internet of money stuff. never mind. I guess it's not cool. Never mind. Okay, cool. And then that was 2010. Then I came back again in 2013 and then 2015 and never had any crypto buddies. And then I finally met Joel Kahn, my crypto buddy. And now here we are, married to bad crypto.
That's an interesting journey. Yeah. I have two younger brothers, but we're all within 3 years apart. Mm-hmm. And so my brother, who is 15 months younger, actually was way more into Bitcoin before I was. Like, I was kind of coming from the gaming world. He was coming from like geeking out in his college dorm, like mining and, you know, but also gaming, because they had like Alienware, like they had the hardware you needed to do this stuff. So that's where I'm thinking like there is overlap between gaming.
Oh, for sure. But I just learned that I just learned that the system was corrupt. Once I learned that the Federal Reserve Bank wasn't a federal or wasn't a reserve, and they printed dollars out of thin air, I was like, wait a second, that sucks. It'd be good if we could find a solution for that. And I thought in 2008, 2009, I was really preparing. I thought the system was going to collapse. I was like, man, this is some crazy stuff going down. So I was, you know, buying gold and silver at the time. Mm-hmm. And then really, you know, as it progressed, I was still buying it up into 2011. I was like, man, even though that I mined some Bitcoin, it's still the value of it hadn't hit yet. And so I was just, I was thinking I could only mine it. And so I know that it just trashed my laptop. And so I was like, I'm not going to mine that. This is just horrible. That's just a bad investment. It's just killing my computer. little did we know, I should have bought several computers and destroyed all of them.
So you said you got into gaming early. I was playing World of Warcraft when vanilla came out, you know, a couple weeks into it, and still have subscribed to it, you know, and follow that along. What was your first thing that you saw that had these digital assets in game where you thought, oh, this is the future?
It was probably, I mean, it was all of them, but I would say like Warcraft or Starcraft or any of these communities had there was a trading or like you could feel that versus I came into it. I was more into strategy games like Age of Empires or this game called Tribes 2, which was like a first person shooter. Like, I don't know. I didn't really feel it in them, but it's around the Worldcraft time, at least in my experience, is when I started to see it and wanted to study it. But the anthropology professors in the department were like, this, you have to go study like physical, real people living in some remote place. And it wasn't, it was a little too wacky for them. So that's where I found Second Life. Cause it was like, it's like the closest parallel to a community that would be in physical existence. So that's where I got kind of the deeper knowledge.
And it's still alive today. I mean, Second Life still exists, right? And people still play it.
I haven't. So I know it's actually High Fidelity. So Linden Labs, which created Second Life. I don't know. I haven't been in Second Life for ever, like many, many years. But I know they've released or are working on High Fidelity, which is a VR-enabled version of Second Life that is basically proposing. I mean, their big vision is like, we're going to create a Ready Player One. Like, we're creating the infrastructure for that. And I do know that they have an in-world set of currencies or currencies that are, you know, crypto-enabled or blockchain-enabled. I haven't honestly looked that deeply into it, though.
So which games are you seeing online? Like, I'm watching Gods Unchained really closely.
Yeah.
That's the one that to me seems like, okay, they've got some serious backing.
Yeah, Gods Unchained in the, again, as I mentioned earlier, the digital collectible thing, I think it's a good starting point. That's actually when I first got into the space, we were working on, I mean, the term tokenizing didn't exist yet, but basically creating links between physical collectibles. So that behavior was there. And I think it's a thing. I don't think it's the end game. Again, I think it's basically like V.001 in the start of the infrastructure that we'd be creating, not just for gaming, but for work and for living. So if we're, you know, again, spending most of our times in or immersed in a virtual or digital environment, which we already are, we just don't have like a nice experience in it. I think there's so much more we can go. I do think we need interoperability or systems or connections through, say, like engines or Unity, where you can bring your value or assets across or between these environments or worlds or whatever it is. Because again, assuming that like my digital presence or group of digital presences, whether they are me exactly or like anonymous avatars, whatever it is, I need to be able to bring that around for any of this stuff to catch on. But yeah, I mean, I think Gods Unchained does seem to have the most traction right now.
I think it's going to be interesting, as you're talking about, as this immersive world. I'm really looking for, I have the VR, I have the Oculus Quest, but I'm really looking for that augmented reality experience to be able to see things overlaying. And, you know, we were talking, as I mentioned, the Minecraft thing, but I just like, it could just be so handy. It's one of the reasons why I got LASIK, and I don't have glasses on right now, but that's just, there's no lens in them.
Just for fashion.
I got LASIK because I know eventually I want to have some badass AR glasses, right? I want to be able to, I need to, you know, because everybody has this thing called tech neck, where everybody's like bending down all the time looking at their phone. Right. Like, that is completely horrible. Let's just put a little browser over here and little pieces of information that I need. I can look at them whenever I need them. I don't want to bend down all the time. Like, I think the evolution of humans is going to be, hey, they stood upright and then they started slouching and now they're just one big ball of slouch. And I think it's...
Yeah, terrible. I already... So I was very bad for my help working on, you know, multiple startup companies, and I wouldn't sit in a desk. I'd sit on a couch or wherever in our office and hunch down on a laptop. And so I actually developed my neck like physically started to hunch over, and I had the start of scoliosis. Like, I was at the chiropractor and they're like, this isn't an injury, this is, you know, computer injuries.
Yeah.
So I do think Yeah, I can imagine, you know, we're slowly becoming more and more bionic. You know, we've got the earbuds starting, and then you'll have the augmented reality glasses, and then you'll have a chip in your hand to, you know, control the interface on your glasses. Yeah,
we're slowly becoming
your whereabouts.
Yeah, slowly becoming the people in WALL-E.
That's okay.
So that's in the book. Right?
My favorite.
You talk about that.
Yeah, I do, because one, there was a time when we shifted from from DVDs to Netflix and digital movies, and I still had this DVD collection, but I bought one new DVD and it was WALL-E, and it was sitting on my fireplace, and everyone's like, are you just is that the only movie you own? And it was, because it was it was the last DVD I ever bought, and I just love it. I mean, it was very apropos. Telling.
It's very, yeah, very good. So let's talk about this then. So, you know, as we know, we're shifting into this new world, and, you know, you talk about this, some tips to prepare your organization and even to prepare your life to sort of like, how do you adopt this new digital crypto asset virtual world that we're entering? Because some people are going to be pulled into it very unwillingly.
Oh, that was definitely an article, and that is also the conclusion of a lot of the speaking I do, because it'll be, let's say we're in a room talking to a bunch of executives that work at a company that's existed for 100 years or sometimes even longer. And this notion of a shift, whether you're talking about a shift in how, you know, the big shift of how, what is money, how we manage money, who controls money, if anyone, that's a big enough shift. But then if we're saying that this concept of decentralization is going to impact or is impacting pretty much every facet of life, from how we conceive of or where we place trust in, is it the institution that is say we're talking about education, it's no longer the university, or say we're talking about healthcare, it's no longer the hospital or the insurance companies. And so we're completely changing where we place that trust or how we manage it in a distributed or global environment. And it's gnarly. It's just, it's a crazy concept. Some person came up to me after a talk and was like, so it seems like we're getting rid of the nation state, or that's what you're suggesting. Do you think the transition will be peaceful? And I was like, well, one, that's a leading question. So I don't know if I necessarily believe that, but I think he was getting at sort of what you're getting at, of like, this is a big transition. I mean, we're already seeing people all over the world with, you know, Chile and Hong Kong and sort of, you know, more, I wouldn't say violent, but kind of people challenging the system.
Upheaval, going down
and
over
so
there.
Obviously, we don't want that sort of transition. And I think enough people have been working on making this a usable system for a long enough time that it's, you know, we're kind of moving over in a responsible pace. It's not just some overnight thing. But, you know, the tips that I say are, one, for me, recognize that the technology is more a shift in mindset. So it's not like 2009, you know, Bitcoin triggered all of this. There were a lot of things happening beforehand. In 2008, primarily, you know, the actual recognition that there's global distrust in the banking system. Mm-hmm. And that was many years before that leading up. So we had these shifts happening long before, and the technology was maybe the response to those shifts. So first, look on the macro level. I also, the thing I say is, you know, return to first principles and don't retrofit existing systems. Like, I did a lot of work with these companies that are like, let's slap a blockchain on our ERP system and, again, track lettuce or track mangoes or track coffee, you know, and coming from the supply chain world. And I'm like, you're not looking at this the right way. I mean, maybe if it's an incremental step, but, you know, we need to look at it completely fresh. Like, what is a new system that can be built? And then third is, yeah, I'd say be optimistic and look at it with abundance, not some, you know, super nihilistic, violent mindset. You know, through any bit of change, there are always industries or people. Like, people ask me question, will my job exist? Will my company exist? Will my industry exist? And that's a scary thought. Maybe not. I don't know, but that's happened many, many times through history. That doesn't mean it disappears and nothing else replaces it. Just means you have to be, you know, excited and ready to adapt.
Yeah. Right. Every time there's been a job replacement, the people whose jobs are being replaced pitch a fit. But it's happened so many times throughout the centuries, right? And new jobs come up as a result. Have you read Byron Reese's book, The Fourth Age, where he talks about us moving
into... At some point, but no, I have to reread it.
I mean, we're basically moving into this new age of humanity, and it's a huge shift that that robotics are really going to be replacing a lot of jobs. And the question, you know, for the entrepreneur out there and the visionary is to think, okay, what opportunities will that create? Not what jobs are going to be lost, but where are the needs going to be? Because they will be there. We just can't see what those are now because we're not quite living in the future yet.
Yeah. Well, they're going to need to be a big need for spaceless sprockets.
Yeah.
Those type of things. That's a Jetsons joke.
Oh, by the way, here's something really interesting. We are, for when the Jetsons took place, it was like the year 2070.
And really?
Yeah, the show came out 50 years ago. So we are exactly at the midpoint.
Oh, wow.
Right now for where we should expect Rosie, you know, to be able to take care of our household needs.
That's just crazy to think about. Like, here we are. We're in 2020, right? I mean, we're 6 weeks away from 2020. Like, we don't have flying cars yet, right? But we do have these amazing Dick Tracy watches and phones and stuff. And it's like, it seems like we should be a little bit farther down the evolutionary scale a little bit. But I think it seems that so many people, as you just mentioned, Sam, it's like they don't want to rethink a system. They don't want to rethink paradigms and look at it with a fresh view. They want to put a Band-Aid on broken systems and just kind of kick the can down the road a little bit and let somebody else deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, one, a lot of these people will be that are in that position will at some point, they're looking at their retirement. So they're like, yeah, okay, we're not going to do the work now. I want to leave a good legacy and retire. And then the other side, so I mean, at a certain point, I just did a talk on open banking in Brazil, and it's such an annoying concept to me because it's this concept of banking the unbanked. And I get it. Yes, there's this kind of financial inclusion element, but it's a lot of BS PR from what I've found. Really what it is that it's the last untapped market of people in the banking industry. And once they tap that, there's nowhere left to go. So my argument to them was, you know, first of all, stop bullshitting everyone and saying you're some do-gooder out there. Some people are, but most, you know, are, I don't know your opinions on, say, Libra or Facebook or organizations like that. It's for them. It's just, it's an untapped market. But again, once you hit that and you have kind of the complete coverage, there's nowhere left to go. So you have to start thinking about reinventing the whole system and ideally for the better.
Did you do the illustrations in the book?
No, that was actually, that's my girlfriend who did the illustrations.
Well, they're cute, but what I really think is sweet is at the very back of the book, I'm assuming that this photo is you and your dad.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just a little thing in front of the computer and dad's like showing you, okay, here's where the floppy disk goes.
Yeah. That's where I got exposed, at least like it kind of grew up in a time where like computers were not something you necessarily had in the home. My dad ran a business. It was in retail and there were some warehouses and there was a large, like massive mainframe computer. Like it took up a whole room and would print out like inventory information. And so I grew up, I guess, having access to some of this technology that began to interest me. But he was also, he was kind of a gamer himself. I remember he had the game Myst. I don't know if you remember that. We were allowed to play it because it was his like special game. He's like, you guys don't mess this up with my brothers and I.
But, it was groundbreaking. It was the first truly immersive atmospheric adventure game. I mean, you know, up until that point, adventure games were side scroller type things. You know, you click from one side to the other. It's like, you know, The Secret of Monkey Island, LucasArts did this stuff. And then Myst came out and won all the awards. And those guys are still producing great content, only now they're doing it for VR. So you get these amazing environments. The last one they did, the name evades me, but I played it all the way through on my computer. Then they came out with it on VR. And just amazing stuff that really takes you away from real world, puts you into another world, and allows you to have an experience that, you know, previous generations would have only dreamed of. I mean, all they had was the real world. Now we have the living fantasy world.
Yeah, I tried some. I went to a VR zone in Tokyo and tried some of the very immersive experiences. So, you know, skiing or flying, or there was one horror game where you're like in a wheelchair trapped in a haunted asylum, which was terrifying. But it's incredible how, one, they've fixed a lot of the latency issues, and that it truly feels real. Like, I fell off a cliff in the skiing game and I like actually felt like I died. It was a weird like mind experience.
I hope you're still. I hope you're. I, hope you're, I don't. Not know. The ghost of Sam Rad.
Yeah,
talking on that crypto here Sam today. Rad. And actually, if you ever decided you want to do your own crypto show, you can call it Rad Crypto, the Rad Crypto.
Okay.
Rad
yeah.
Crypto podcast. I like that.
Yeah. So, you know, what other, you know, maybe final words of wisdom, you know, since you're falling off ski cliffs and stuff, like, what final words of wisdom would you like to depart upon the great citizens of the Republic of Bad Cryptopia?
I'm not that profound. I guess for me, it's just, I mean, I consider myself a student, a lifelong student of everything. I find it deeply frustrating when, you know, people are purporting to be experts or know it all. No one knows it all. And frankly, we're all just experimenting together, building together and seeing what happens. I mean, on an experiment or an initiative, this, it's like on a global scale, and it's like globally reinventing society. It's a big, crazy mission. So I guess I'd say keep learning, keep building, and stay humble. Keep an open mind. I don't know.
You know, I can say with absolute certainty, I mean, I'm positive about this, and you might disagree, but I can say with 100% certainty, and I'm not going to be humble about it, that I know absolutely nothing.
Yeah. So
that's the one thing I'm certain of.
I can be certain of that, too. He is a rock.
Dumb as a stack of bricks. Sam, what, I mean, the book's out now. You guys should go get a copy of Bitcoin Pizza. You know, I think what would be awesome is if you did a partnership with, you know, Papa John's, or find out which pizza company is the most, you know, crypto forward thinking, and they get, you know, when they buy your book, they get like, you know, free pizza or something.
Yeah, I actually, for the launch of the book, I partnered with Lightning Pizza, which is, you know, kind of the initiative of Fold app and Thesis, and we airdrop pizzas to people, Domino's pizzas.
Where's my pizza?
Around the country. And then, yeah, well, if you want, we can airdrop you a pizza.
Incoming! But, this pizza just
plummeted onto me. A few pizza companies.
I would pay to see that. That would be great. Can we do that in virtual reality? Just watch Joel get slathered with pizzas?
I could be like in, what was the Spaceballs, the Mel Brooks film, Pizza the Hut, right?
Yes.
Sam, what are you working on now? What's your big project in, you know, in the crypto area?
I mean, it's all over the place. I've looked and started working on some gaming things. Who knows? Maybe I'll have, instead of collecting coins, you can collect pizzas all over the world. No, I mean, really, it was the book. I think I might be exploring another book and then doing some research. I'm really into kind of countering surveillance capitalism with this technology. So I'm kind of approaching it from that angle, and have been working with a few ecosystems as well.
Well, I always feel like somebody's watching me.
Yeah.
That's why I wear sunglasses at night.
Oh, now I got to add two songs to the Bad Crypto playlist, Mr. Travis, right? Don't I? Samantha Radacchio, and the book is Bitcoin Pizza. What's the website for it, Sam?
It's on Amazon or bitcoinpizzabook.com.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. And you're going to do some really big stuff. Not that you haven't already, but what a bright future you've got.
Thank you.
Absolutely rad. As promised, hope you guys go out there and get a copy of Sam's book.
Jai. How cool is she? Not only is she, you know, teaching people about the cryptos and, you know, being sort of a cultural anthropologist and a technologist, but she's also a licensed pilot and has jumped out of airplanes over 700 times. Like, what?
I've probably flown in airplanes several hundred times, but I've never jumped out of one. And I never will.
You know, I don't, I thought I used to want to, and then I decided I didn't want to. Because, like, have you ever seen when somebody jumps out of an airplane and their face is like...
I wish you guys could see this right now.
That just looks uncomfortable.
You've only got your imagination. So I actually went to one of those places, the iFly. You know, they're the places you go to that's got these fans that basically you suit up. And it was uncomfortable. I did not like the sensation of the wind being thrust up my nasal passages.
No, I don't like that.
I found it uncomfortable. And I'm like, you know, I'm gonna leave jumping out of planes to other people. That's just not something that's on my bucket list.
You know, if I had like a set of goggles and then maybe like an oxygen mask so I don't have to have that wind just blowing in my face like that, I think I could deal with it. But that is it. Like, I don't even... You know what? I was complaining about when I was in the airplane today, like the little fan above my head was a little too high. I had to turn it down. I was like, this is really blowing on my nostrils. Like, imagine jumping out of an airplane and getting that. That's no good.
In your mind, you were like, I'm skydiving and I'm not like
this. In my mind, like, wow, he is such a wuss when it comes to wind. And then I landed in Iceland, and then I was like, oh my God, it is so windy. It's icy. What the hell? I thought it was going to be sunny here. Truth, this was an island.
Truth in advertising.
You know, way back in the day, like thousands of years ago, whenever they named Iceland, like Iceland is the one that's more, you know, habitable. Greenland is not. So like the Vikings were like, ha, 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 ha. That's like one of the oldest trolls ever. Like, let us right. name this Greenland and this Iceland, and nobody will come to Iceland. Everyone will go to Greenland. We are trolling people in real life. That was like an old, like, yeah.
Yeah, they were the 4chan of their day.
Yeah, like, that was seriously, and they were laughing, going, oh, God, they're going to come up there with their big galleon, and they're going to see it's shit. There's no green in Greenland. Suck it, galleon.
Wow. All right. For those of you wondering, we've recorded this a little in advance so that while we're on the road, we don't have to be looking for, you know, great bandwidth. It's like the moment you find good bandwidth when the two of us are on the road, that's the moment you go, okay, we're going to record, you know, a couple weeks worth of content. And
we are right now with good bandwidth, decent bandwidth.
Decent bandwidth. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. As always, we appreciate you. Please evangelize for us on our behalf. I mean, it's not like we want to become cult leaders or anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you do want to subscribe to the religion of bad crypto as a card-carrying member of the Republic of Bad Cryptopia, tell others about the show and have them subscribe, because blockchain is here to stay. Crypto is here to stay. At least that's what we believe as your favorite non-financial advisors. And your family and your friends and your business associates, they're going to need to know about this stuff. And we hope that you found us a good entry point for cryptocurrency, and maybe we're an exit point for some of you, but for the majority, you know, it's really cool because when we meet people, one of the best things that we hear, Travis, is when people say, you were, you know, my entry point into crypto. You were my starter drug, you know, to enter into the Bitcoin space.
Well, that is great. And speaking of which, you know, money has existed for thousands of years. And I mean, it's really interesting how it's progressed from shells to these precious metals and minted coins into paper money. And but the transfer of modern money is very slow and it's expensive. So that brings in our other sponsor, MobiPay. They have the MobiPay ecosystem that consists of these three core applications that let users spend and send money and digital cryptos all over the world with their mobile phone. And even if they don't have a bank account, They also have this cash back programs with MobiCoin as an integrated reward and payment token that connects all fiat and major cryptocurrencies directly to the retail marketplace, all in one Mobi ecosystem. Go ahead and check it out at MobiPay, MobiePay.io. Do it.
Thanks to our sponsors, MobiPay and eToro. We appreciate you guys. We believe in what you're doing and happy to support. And we believe in you. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you guys on the next go round of Bad Crypto. Got a great show for you coming up here in episode number 340. So until then, stay bad. The Bad Crypto Podcast is a production of Bad Crypto LLC. The content of the show, the videos, and the website is provided for educational, informational, and entertainment purposes only. It's not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, or trading advice of any kind. You shouldn't make any decisions as to finances, investing, trading, or anything else based on this information without undertaking independent due diligence and consultation with a professional financial advisor. Please understand that the trading of Bitcoins and alternative cryptocurrencies have potential risks involved. Anyone wishing to invest in any of the currencies or tokens mentioned on this podcast should first seek their own independent professional financial advisor.